Tannehill will throw it, and this will end it after the shovel, or will it? Miami running around, circling, oh look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle! Touchdown! Oh, Kenyon Drake! A miracle!
Hello, welcome to the Dolphin UK podcast. Sorry, it's been a little while. We were kind of waiting for some news on Terran Armstead. We still haven't got it, so we're recording nonetheless. Joined by Lee. How are you, sir?
Very well, thank you. Kind of, I don't want to say expectant father, but is that kind of like nervous waiting, like pre-Christmas? I don't know what, like that kind of feeling you get before you go on a holiday, where you're like nervous, excited. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yep, crazy. Yeah, let's get this deal done.
I know. And I'm kind of sat here with like the mock draft machine open thinking, oh, when we sign him, I'll just draft this person.
But what it changes everything.
Yeah, exactly. So pivotal piece, radio silence for 48 hours since he was supposed to arrive in Miami. Many people speculating that the Sun would draw him in and it would be signed before he got to the stadium. But clearly that isn't or hasn't happened, or we don't know that it's happened. So you can guarantee as soon as I drop this, we'll find out. So if you listen to this, skip forward 5 minutes and get to the bit where about people we have actually signed. If you know what the deal is already before you listen to this. Lee, I mean, should we be kind of judging the whole free agency class based on whether we sign Terran Armstead? Is he the kind of pivotal piece in the jigsaw puzzle here?
It kind of feels that way. Like, you know, a lot of the moves, and we're going to go on to talk about them in a little bit, but a lot of the moves is kind of like retaining the base of where you were. So, you know, and that's great. We all feel like we've got a lot to build on, but you can't build on it if you let all those pieces walk away in free agency. So, yeah, they're not huge splash deals. And like, it almost feels like Emmanuel Ogba seems like forever ago. And it's funny, isn't it? Because it kind of feels less exciting because he was already on your team. So it doesn't feel like that splash, but you've got to remember that was big money to an important player. So, you know, you know, it's really important, but yeah, it does feel like everything hinges on this. And it feels like, you know, this is the front office's big ticket item. This is the guy they wanted, you know. We saw reports about Lyle Collins when he was, you know, talked about in trade terms and then when he was released, but it never really felt like they kind of really made a push. It was more kind of, it felt tentative and more like, this is the guy we really like, this is plan A. If we can get you as well, great, but like really everything revolves around, and I imagine we'll see a lot more moves if he signs afterwards in regards to, we haven't seen a lot of restructuring. We haven't heard anything about Xavier Howard's restructure. We haven't heard anything about people being, you know, we had the kind of, and I don't want to kind of throw anyone under the bus, but it's kind of the guys that were expected to be kind of let go as cap casualties or just to build like obvious space where the contract was not proportionate to the play. None of that stuff happened. So it feels like all that is based on what's going on now and kind of letting the market, you know, kind of work itself back out. I'm not worried that we haven't heard anything outside of he's in Miami. That's great, which means, I think when it comes to free agency, especially these guys, you know, the players, you know, the real top of free agency, he's not coming here unless the parameters for the money is already not agreed, but he knows they're in the ballpark, right? That's a case of finessing and finding, you know, sorting out the fine details. Because if you're out by a long way, he's not even traveling to Miami to take this meeting. Why would you? I'm sure there's, you know, I'm sure the Saints are trying to do everything they can to bring him back, you know, and we heard that the Bears are interested. And, you know, if you're the first place he's taking the meeting, I think you can safely assume that the money side of things is not the issue.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we won't spend too long on it because we don't know in about, I don't know, 5 hours' time if it'll be a Miami Dolphin or not. So go on,
I think I'm just going to say the other thing is people are freaking out today because Chris Greer's not there. Again, yeah. if the money side of things is sorted out, then it's more about fit and the medical and stuff like that. And Chris Greer isn't doing that stuff.
Yeah.
He's kind of done his job by getting him in the building. So the fact that he's not there, I don't think is necessarily a negative. Don't know if it's a positive, but I certainly don't think it's necessarily a negative.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's kind of talk about some of the guys that have signed then. I wanted to start on the offensive line still with Connor Williams, a 24-year-old guard who signed from the Cowboys. Feels like an immediate starter. Like there's some kind of worry about him having committed a lot of penalties last year. Again, I don't think that's a big issue when you look at the sort of amount of pressures, amount of sacks he gave up. It is paltry compared to the guys that were in Miami last season. So this feels like a really solid, sensible addition. Only 24, as I say. That's going to be a theme throughout these free agents as we kind of look through them today. Very young, sort of talented guys who've still got a lot of upside. Feels like he brings a certain energy to that offensive line as well. If everyone kind of shared that same clip of him manhandling Aaron Donald. So, yeah, Lee, I mean, good signing, I think.
Yeah, positive. It seems like you say, an obvious plug and play. I know yesterday we were lucky enough to be on the availability yesterday when they talked to him, and he was kind of a little bit skirting the issue about being asked exactly which position he's going to play. I'm guessing he knows what the plan is, and the plan is that he'll be playing left guard, and Teron Armstead will be standing next to him at left tackle. But obviously, there's more pieces to fall there. But I mean, he was confident and assured. He sounds like he knows he's the guy. He knows what he's been brought in to do. Sounded excited to be here. Definitely a theme that's carried on from last year, and I mentioned this yesterday, is that these guys are confident and talk well to the media. And I don't think it's a case of all players and all teams, but these guys are definitely great communicators. And that kind of makes sense for... Yeah. Hang on. Sorry, someone just sent me a Chase Edmonds tweet. Anyway, which kind of makes sense with Mike McDaniel. He obviously likes to talk, likes to be a good communicator. So this just seems like a no-brainer. Someone who's had been playing on a successful line as well can bring a confidence and still help bring those guys along. Like we've been on here for a while saying, you know, we need upgrades on the offensive line. That doesn't mean just jettisoning everything that was already there. Those guys are still going to be integral parts of the team. They're going to be backup players. These players still can be brought along. So guys like Connor Williams who have experience and good experience, priceless, really.
Exactly. And, I know that Williams played left tackle for Texas in college. So it feels to me like there has been that kind of, will he play tackle, will he play guard? It depends on whether we get Armstead, I think. I think if we don't get Armstead, there's a strong chance you see Connor Williams starting at left tackle, start the year with Eichenberg out on the right. Whoever at guard and Robert Hunt at right guard. So that does feel like something that could happen. Obviously, that wouldn't be the massive desirable thing to happen based on his experience of the Cowboys. It's obviously a solid guard and you kind of want players to play in their best position. But do you know what? That positional versatility is something that we've talked about over the last couple of years since we've been doing the pod. Adds a bit more value to you as a player, not necessarily monetary, but in terms of where you fit in on the team. And so, yeah, it looks like just going to definitely start along that line somewhere.
Yeah, and I mean, look, we're going to be far more comfortable if something happens to a left tackle and he has to step in for a portion of time. You're going to feel much better about that than where we were last year. So, I mean, I would say, again, try to be polite here. He looks a little athletic to be the left tackle in this offense. They always seem to have much bigger guys. Like Teron Armstead is a mountain of a human being. And it seems like, they obviously may not sign him, but that's the body type that they seem to like in that position. Trent Brown is another absolute man mountain. Like, yeah. I don't know. It just feels like he might not be their kind of prototypical guy they want at left tackle. But like you say, he has that versatility. So if things go wrong, Steph, you know, is possibly an upgrade on what we've already seen.
Exactly. And the only other position that like is still got a raving huge question mark for me is the centre position. And so I think either Michael Dyer is going to get another chance. I think I've seen he's only actually started like 8 games in his career, so essentially still a rookie in all intents and purposes. But interestingly, that centre position feels like somewhere you could probably fix at the end of the first round. If they're after someone like Tyler Linderbaum from Iowa, you know, teams above us don't seem to have that as a great need. And you don't want to be spending top 15, 20 kind of capital on a centre maybe. And so when you get down to where we're picking, that sort of range feels good. I know that in the latest like mock draft I've done for the 410 yards guys, that's where we go there. And so that feels like it would inject a bit of high quality youth into that position as well, and someone to grow with two of there rather than just supplanting Dieter with another kind of aging veteran or something. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it opens up the world of possibilities if you were able to, let's say, come the end of hopefully tonight, but you know, it very soon that you've got a line that looks currently like Armstead, Williams, let's say Dieter for now. Whoever wins out at right guard, because I think that still becomes a competition. And to me, Liam Eikenberg on the right-hand side, because he has the most upside right now, that we're feeling way better than where we were, but it gives you options in the draft, and that's hugely important. There's also some really good quality veteran talent out there. And maybe that's a good route to go. It seems like they like experience at that position as well. You know, the kind of history with this scheme is actually going out and getting high quality centers. It feels like, again, that could be a route they go, but because the Tyrone Armstead deal is so, it's obviously going to be a big one money wise like I think everything becomes on hold till then, and that's why we've seen a lot of the deals so far have been kind of re-signing your own guys, re-signing the kind of depth of the team rather than the splash that, you know, hey, we all want to go and make a splash. But yeah, I think until then, everything gets put on hold. So, you know, we may even see a center signed before then. Again, giving you more flexibility when you come to the draft, because you want to take another O-lineman, you can do that. But you can certainly go an awful lot of places based on what they've done in free agency, you know, in that first round pick.
Exactly. Right, move on from the line. And the guys that they'll be blocking for, that's their complete overhaul. And that's quite exciting. I think we've got Raheem Mostert come across from the Niners, and he is currently 29, nearly 30. So at the kind of older end of the spectrum for a running back. And then Chase Edmonds, who we've talked about last week. So we'll focus more on Mostert here, but that kind of, they're both, it's difficult to say similar players, but they are fairly similar in the fact that they're sort of speed merchants more than sort of, you know, pound between the gap sort of players. But I think that's just completely indicative of the offense that we're going to see next year. We'll be hitting the outside a lot. And I still wouldn't rule out a third sort of rotational piece for short yardage as well. I think that's where the draft might lend itself again in those later rounds. But let's talk about Mostert briefly. I mean, not last year, the year before, there was a lot of hype around him, wasn't there? He got a short-term deal in San Francisco. He held out for some money. They gave it him, obviously, played very well. And I think, you know, you saw him the fastest player in the league with the ball in his hands at one point in that season, which is, you know, says it all about the offense we're going to run again. But kind of didn't really click last year. There's obviously injuries. He came in, played a few snaps and, you know, here and there. But that Niners offense showed you the rotation that we're probably likely to see in the Dolphins offense as well. So, mate, any sort of thoughts on Mostert? Do you think he's going to be the beat out like Edmonds for the kind of first snap of the game, or do you really think it's a timeshare? It really doesn't matter.
I think it really is going to be on a case-by-case basis. I think, you know, you spoke a minute ago with the O-line about versatility, and the same thing's going to go here. They are similar kind of players because we're starting to see what this coaching staff and what this offense needs, which is great. I think ideally Edmonds is the number one, And I only say that because it feels like the Mostert signing makes an absolute ton of sense, but a large portion of that is based on his knowledge of the system and helping implement it. And, you know, I'm not a fan of people who go out and just sign everybody from their old team because they know them. But you also need a couple of those guys to help implement it. You know, this is a real overhaul. This is going to be quite the change for players who were already on this team. And the easiest way to do that is the more people who know what's going on, the better. That's why having a Wes Welker on the coaching staff makes a difference. So, I mean, it makes a ton of sense. I think everyone knew it was kind of fairly likely to happen. And yeah. Then even Mostert himself said yesterday that he'd been in contact with Mike McDaniel and it, you know, kind of intimated to him that he would do whatever he could to get him to the team that he would hopefully be the head coach of. Just happens to be Miami, which is great. But, you know, yeah. It seems like it was always going to be he's the perfect fit for this system, and hey, perfect fits are great.
Exactly, and that's an interesting point you made around sort of transitioning into the culture. I was watching listening to a documentary the other day or something, can't remember what it was, but it was about Arsenal when Arsene Wenger took over, and I think it's Graham Stack actually. Yeah, that was it. It was Ben Foster interviewing Graham Stack, and Graham Stack was saying that when Wenger came in, it was new diets, it was kind of new training regimes, it was new schedules, and it was completely alien to the British game back in the 90s, and it wouldn't have worked if Wenger didn't bring over Vieira and a couple of others who kind of knew the system and knew the benefits of it immediately, and they could carry the locker room. You know, when the coach leaves the room, they're all going to chat and say this is rubbish, whatever. You can't really do that when you've got the players that are an example of why the coach is doing it in there, and this is exactly the same, isn't it? Let's not lie. So yeah, really good point. I think that's perfect why Mostert's here. I think that's why Trent Sherfield's joined as well, and I'm sure it won't be the last of 500 of those guys with the McDaniel connection that walks through the door, and obviously a good point about Welker on the staff as well. So yeah, really interesting. For me, it'll be whether Mostert can stay healthy. I think there's a good, you know, he's got a good year at least left in it as a kind of lead running back. If he can just get on a run of games, I think he's a momentum player. I think when you see him in short bursts, you're not kind of wowed by the technical sort of ability, but if he's like fully fit and can get up to speed and kind of hit the edge of that line, going to be transformational. And a lot of people, I think, are probably thinking, well, this is what Miles Gaskin brings, this is what Philip Lindsay brings, this is what Savon Ahmed brings, but there's a quality difference, isn't there, at the end of the day, and there's a proven productivity difference at the end of the day as well. We know that Miles Gaskin's okay, but we know that Mostert on his day can take over a game and win it for you.
More importantly, the head coach knows that. He has experience with it. You know, he's watched the tape. He's seen the players. He obviously wants to keep the guys that were in the room there as well. But the difference is he knows Mostert will work in this system. Like that, it's not. There's no doubt about that. You know, providing they get the O-line to a position where they can run the offense the way they want to. This is, and you know, to be honest, I think especially when it comes to the run game, providing the quarterback understands the philosophy of the system, it doesn't even matter who the guy handing the ball off it is. It's a case of executing it correctly. So, you know, there's very limited risk in doing it this way. So, I mean, it just makes a ton of sense. And if, you know, going back to last year, I banged the table to pick Najee Harris in the first round, and I loved Najee Harris. I don't think he'd be a fit for this system. You know, we'd now be looking at it going, I don't know if that's really, you know, going to pan out in our favour. So, you know, it just goes to show that you've got to have the right style of player to, you know, to execute what you've got in your mind.
Exactly. And as a compliment to those running backs, we've signed Alec Ingold, the fullback from Vegas, who a lot of people were very excited about as soon as they saw that deal happen. I don't know why everyone loves a fullback.
I love a fullback.
it's very much a sort of, feels like a rugby position, doesn't it? Sort of a rucker and a mauler, and just get in there and clear out the path in front. But that's not all that Ingold brings. We've seen him catch passes at the backfield, seen him carry the ball as well. So it just feels like a vital cog for us, doesn't it?
It feels like you want to use that word versatile again.
I love it. Yeah.
If it, you know, and he is versatile. I love watching fullback play. I've wanted a fullback for a long time because I think it especially helps at times if you have an O-line deficiency, you essentially have an extra blocker. But that blocker's deciding based on what's actually happening in front of him, where he's going to block. It's not necessarily, you know, he has a gap, but he still has to then go and find the block. And I think it leads to many more chances to spring people for big plays. So, you know, I'm really excited for it. Like you say, you can also catch out the backfield, some versatility. Also, love fullbacks in short yardage because, let's be honest, for everything we've said about Mostert and Chase Edmonds, they're lighter guys. And sometimes you need that guy, right, I'm going to pivot and I need a yard. Get me a yard and a half. And an Ingold is, you know, feels like he could be that kind of guy. So it's just another use, something else you can do and some more versatility you can have in those short yardage situations. It's not just an obvious run or a quarterback sneak. You've now got a third option, you know, if you're not obviously passing the ball, but don't know, it just opens up a world of possibilities. And there's so many times that you see a team with too many tight ends on a roster, you're like, the guy's never going to play. So get more use out of a fullback. So yeah, I'm excited for it.
You get the impression we're going to see a lot of 22 personnel. Just feels like there's going to be a lot of that, doesn't there? That might put some people off, but that feels like it will be effective for the quarterback skill set, for the sort of, at the moment, the kind of level of receiver we've got on the roster and the sort of pass catching tight end we've got. So that feels like it would be sort of.
We will all love it if it works.
Indeed.
That's all that matters.
Indeed. Yeah, can't complain about that. And that brings me nicely on to the receiver position, which I think some people are very underwhelmed with, aren't they? But it's hard to argue either case at the moment. I'm feeling like, yes, I can appreciate why those people are feeling underwhelmed that we haven't gone out and splashed a lot of cash. But when you saw the options are out there after the franchise tag stuff, did you really want to go and spend a lot of cash in that arena? We've brought in Cedric Wilson. They've paid him enough money that you get the impression he will be one of the three wide receivers that are on the fields when those three wide receiver formations are out there. You know, he's bigger in terms of he's bigger in terms of build and sort of style to Jalen Waddle. So there's an immediate compliment there, but he's also got that speed, which again, it just feels immediately evident that it's going to be part of this Miami offense. So your kind of thoughts on Wilson, mate? I mean, I say some people, I think, are underwhelmed with it, but again, 26, you know, plenty of NFL experience already. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, he was stuck on a roster behind two really good players in Gallup and what is the other guy's name? It's completely left my mind.
CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper.
Amari Cooper is the name I was trying to think of. Yes, CeeDee Lamb. So, you know, this feels like it could be one of those real value signings where you look at it and you're like, wow, how is this guy, not more of a household name? There's obviously some nice highlights of him, obviously throwing the ball, not getting too caught up in that, you know, there's more gimmicky stuff. But great build. Definite. I think that was definitely a goal of theirs to set out and get that bigger bodied receiver. It was definitely interesting yesterday in his availability where he said that he actually enjoys playing in the slot because he gets more room to operate. And I imagine lots of people going, whoa, we got Jalen Waddle for that. But I mean, that excites me so much because it opens up the possibilities for a Jalen Waddle who can do more. You know, he'll be able to play in the slot still, but he can also do more. And we know Jalen Waddle can do more. So it's like they keep saying it. It's about getting the best out of the players and their skill set. Well, you know, you sign a Cedric Wilson to open up a Jalen Waddle. And I think that's amazing. I also think Jalen Waddle is like this kind of happy problem that you have where having Jalen Waddle stops you going and spending that money on a wide receiver in free agency. How much do you think you'd have to spend to get Jalen Waddle's production in free agency, especially with the way it panned out. And if you'd spent that sort of money, everyone would be going, well, hang on, why are we paying this much for a guy in free agency when you were able to draft this guy in the first round? You know, I think that probably affects your thinking somewhat. I say we all want the splash signings, but I do really think that it's more finding the pieces to fit the system is far more important than having the big names. We've been down that road. Like Mike Wallace was a great signing. I was really excited because I was looking at these three receivers that year, and there was Greg Jennings was on the market, Mike Wallace, and the guy who's played for Kansas City. I can't think of his name. Anyway, that'll come to me in the middle of the night and really annoy me. But anyway, you know, and we were kind of monitoring them all for free agency, and the Dolphins got one of these big ticket items, but it wasn't the right fit and it just never panned out. It wasn't good for the player and it wasn't good for the team. And I think that's the sort of situation you want to avoid. Cedric Wilson feels like the perfect fit for what they're looking for. And that's more important to me than getting the name. He won't sell as many jerseys in the first year, but that's not my concern.
Exactly. I also wonder whether, I mean, I'm probably reading a bit too much into this, but you've got Wilson coming out of Boise State, which is obviously on the west coast of America in 2018. And you wonder whether the Niners with their sort of local connections there were interested, but just gazumped by, by the Cowboys. So there's that kind of, that just been playing on my mind a bit and just thinking, you know, is this a guy that McDaniel's admired for a while and thinks that, you know, yeah, I can get a lot out of this player. Interesting thought there. Yeah, let's see if that plays out. But yeah, I think he's, I think he'll definitely be a contributor from day one here. I think, 6'2" build, it's just a bit, it's your stereotypical receiver build, isn't it? 6'2", 195 pounds. Yeah. It's going to be outside, inside, wherever is needed.
He doesn't feel like he's been brought in to make the numbers up. It doesn't feel like that sort of, this isn't a depth signing. This feels like a guy that you actually have interest in being a true contributor.
Someone that we have signed who might not be on the field every down, but will be a key piece on special teams will be Trent Sherfield, who's another of those guys that have come over from the Niners. This just screams, mate, and I said it on Twitter, this just screams replacement for Matt Hollins. You've got the kind of video clips of him as the lead gunner, that sort of thing. So we'll have to see, but Sherfield kind of chipped in at points this year, but again, wasn't really in that starting receiver rotation for the Niners. So obviously, McDaniel thinks he can get something out of him on the roster, and I would suggest that is probably special teams.
Yeah. It feels like exactly what it is. It also puts another guy in a different room that knows the system and the way the coach likes to work. And I think it's important that it just makes sense. Look, we know that the defense is kind of like, that's Boyer's thing. That's what it was. That's keeping the pieces and trying to build on it from there. But offense is obviously Mike McDaniel's, and special teams is kind of just sitting there in the middle. So to put a guy on there that knows the sort of vibe, the sort of way, the way you want to work, I don't know, just it feels like he's worth his weight for that as much as the play. Like you say, good highlights as a gunner, so he's obviously going to contribute as well. So, you know, kind of ticks a bunch of boxes.
He does, doesn't he? Yeah, I think, I mean, if you see him pop up with a couple of touchdowns a year, then that's ideal, but his kind of contribution will be a lot less heralded, but equally sort of as valuable in the field position game. And you'd kind of think it probably marks the end of someone like Alan Hearns on the roster. But
Those are those moves that I mean, you know, that we were talking about earlier, where it's like you assume that Alan Hearns is probably not going to be on for the roster. Probably the same with Albert Wilson. Although Albert Wilson feels like a great fit for what this offense would do. And I said that before. Yeah, I know.
We all did.
We all did. And let's be honest, he also gave us that flash of it by having a good game against Baltimore. Okay, everyone seemed to play well against Baltimore. But you know, if he was healthy, he would feel like a great fit for the offense. But, you know, there's a bunch of players there kind of later in contracts where you think that they're obvious kind of cap casualties, but like you say, until the big deal kind of gets done or doesn't get done, I think everything else is just kind of like paused right now.
Yeah. Right. the position of controversy. We have brought in a quarterback who has started a lot of games in the NFL. Only 29, obviously played a lot in Denver last year in a kind of back and forth with Drew Locke. But Teddy Bridgewater has arrived in Miami 2 years, 3 years, 3 years after we tried to sign him to be our bridge quarterback, or at least to eat that season, which Ryan Fitzpatrick successfully won the hearts and minds of Dolphins fans with. So why now? And why do you think they went for Bridgewater?
I got really mixed feelings about this one. So trying to be, you know, trying to keep a level head about it. I think the reason you signed him is fairly obvious. This coaching staff cannot be sure that Tua is going to be healthy 100% of the time because history says that he won't be. Now, there's a lot of arguments, and I certainly know that his off-season coaches have been online saying that he wanted to play. It looks like if he'd had his way, he may have missed that Raiders game last year and it would have been back playing rather than being put on IR. That's a whole thing that we just don't know. But there's also a whole thing that the coaches don't know. They weren't here. They only have Tua's word. Chris, do you know what I mean? You need insurance. And insurance is a guy who's won games in the NFL. So, I mean, I think it makes sense from that point of view. What concerns me is if this offense gets off to a slowish start, which is completely feasible. Like, we're all excited. I'm excited. But it's a new system. There's going to be new players. There's a lot to go. You know, it could be, you know, feasibly 4 out of 5 new starting on the O-line. Teddy is probably too good. Where we may be in that stage again where fans are calling for the backup quarterback because he's won games in the NFL. And that worries me a little bit. But I can see exactly why this is why he was assigning. You know, Mike McDaniel said, and I believe Chris Greer said as well at the combine, they wanted a guy with experience and a guy who can empower the starting quarterback. And I think the only way you can empower it is someone who has experience. So that took the draft off the table completely. And once you go fishing in that pool, look, things happen and backups have to play. It happened to Aaron Rodgers. It happened to a lot of teams last year. It happened to the Seahawks. You know, they lost Russell Wilson for a whole bunch of time. You know, he might not be there now, but, you know, that really hurt them. You need to have someone who can step in and competently play. We weren't that impressed with the way Jacoby Brissett played last year. We would have loved to have someone more competent. So, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I just worry that, say, fans still need to be patient. Tua, you know, I still truly believe Tua is QB1. That's not up for debate. I know there were some people yesterday tried to kind of get Teddy into some hot water by asking about his position on the team, which I thought he answered. He answered well and said that he had he knew where he kind of stood with the coaching staff and stuff like that, but didn't really want to get into it. And I don't blame him. I completely understand why they made this signing for the money they did. You know, I know the money's fairly high. Was it like $6.5 million? It can be up. It is the base, and it can be, and there's more obviously with playing time and stuff like that. You know, it makes sense. I also understand why Teddy would have wanted the job. No, there's a chance that you're going to get to play, which means exactly. There's a chance that it can lead to bigger contracts in the future. Let's be honest. Mitch Trubisky was taken as a starting quarterback a couple of weeks ago because he was a hot property because he didn't play last year. Like, somehow he got better by not playing. So
same with Mariota, isn't it?
It happens all the time.
But you know what? That's such an indictment of how good the quarterback class is in the draft this year, is that people like that are suddenly being recycled in the second chance. It was like Mitch Trubisky was a kind of laughing stock this time a year ago, and it was kind of like, you know, and he was done as a starter now. Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
That's a great signing for Buffalo because, you know, he might be able to get you through a game or two, and, you know, it's a great place because he's a backup. All of a sudden, he's a starter again because of a lack of options. I don't know. Certainly interesting, but I'm glad we're not in that position. But it does feel like we have QB1 until proven otherwise.
Yeah, I'm just glad Jameis got a job. Finally, that's the main thing. That's what I wanted from this free agency. So there we go.
It made sense where he ended up.
Yeah.
And I think we definitely at some point we should probably touch on the whole Deshaun Watson finally getting traded.
Yeah, well, I think that's funny that they've got to deal with A, what the Watson circus, and B, Jacoby Brissett once he gets suspended for a half a season. So good luck, Browns fans.
I mean, I was speaking to a couple of Browns fans at Friends the other day, and like, it's funny how people are feeling the mixed emotions that we were kind of going through when the Dolphins were linked with the player. Like, obviously a talented football player, obviously the off the field stuff is a concern for everybody. But I think one thing that I've noticed coming out of this is, look how much the quarterbacks have been upset by the teams that flirted in, you know, with trade talks and, you know, got involved in this stuff. Like, Baker Mayfield said he wanted out before they even signed Deshaun Watson, traded for him, sorry. You know, that relationship was dead, and that forced them to have to make sure that they came out as winners in that. They were out. You know, Deshaun Watson had ruled them out, and they had to make sure it happened. And they've done that by giving, you know, what could be a really terrible contract based on he didn't play last year, get suspended for a large portion of this year. You could have, like, he was injured the year before. Like, you could have best part of a 2.5 year, 3 year span where he doesn't really play football. And you've guaranteed the entire contract. You know, flipping over to Atlanta, you get involved in trade talks, your quarterback wants out. Like, they said, oh, he knows where we stand and we're only trying to upgrade the position. Like, I'm not going to be very happy if my wife comes home later and says, I just seen him upgraded the position. Oh, no problem. If you don't find anyone, just let me know. I'll still be here.
Like, yeah, exactly.
You know, Matt Ryan wants out. He gets out. Tua, you know, the more you look at it, the better Tua was able to handle that situation. Yes, it affected his play. But you can't blame him. But never asked out. Battled through it. You know, proud that guy's the quarterback of my team. Like, that's just my feeling on it. But I think, as I say, found it very eye-opening the way the kind of the other quarterbacks that were involved in this kind of carousel have reacted since.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely one we'll no doubt touch on in greater depth throughout the off-season. So, we'll look forward to getting to that. A couple of guys left the roster. I mentioned Mac Hollins already. Disappointed to see him go. Became a bit of a cult hero in Miami, hadn't he? Like, we'd talked about his special team contribution, but he always popped up with a massive play on offense as well. Everyone will remember the Raiders game in the sort of COVID season. Absolutely insane play by Fitz, but Hollins had to be there to make the catch. And then we saw it a couple of times last year as well. We saw the deep shot from Tua, which Hollins took in. When you and I were at the game against the Giants, he came down with a good grab in the corner of the end zone. Just had kind of really kind of made himself into Mr. Miami Dolphins for a while as a captain as well. So a shame to see him go. But, you know, good luck to him. He looks like he'll get a larger role on the Raiders next year alongside Devontae Adams. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame. It feels like he probably wasn't as much a fit for what they were going to try and get out of him on offense as much as anything. And then obviously they signed Crossing on defense as a kind of special teamer, but it feels like they think they can get more out of him as a defender as well as a special teams player than they would get out of Mac Hollins as a special teamer as an offensive player. So it feels like they just kind of moved that money from one to the other and bought in another really talented special teamer. So it feels like they don't feel like they've risked that position on the special teams. But it, like you say, it's a shame to see him go because he's obviously a cool guy, a cult hero. Like, and funny, we've spoken so many times about no one seems to be able to like just get open, or no one seems to like get busted coverage, but it seemed to happen to Mac Hollins. He was that guy. You know, all of a sudden he'd be running free down the field. So, you know, shame to see him go, but hey, like, we're trying to get better, and really he was depth at wide receiver. So
exactly. And Duke Johnson's the other guy that is worth mentioning, I think. Obviously going to the Bills. Man, that one stings a little bit.
You didn't.
I was a big I just thought it made too much sense, but then too much sense to kind of re-sign him and just kind of you know, pick up that short yardage at the very least. But I guess that, like we've talked about, it's all about speed. It's all about hitting the edge. That's something that Johnson's not really there to do. Not to say that he can't do that, but you probably want Raheem Mostert doing that specific role over him. And we've got Alec Ingold probably for the short yardage stuff. And I'm sure that we'll, like I said to you earlier, I think we'll pick up somebody late in the draft as a sort of every down back that probably can do that a bit better than the two speed guys we've bought, but will also be able to hit the edge as well. So
it feels like a Chase Edmonds as well. If you get a chance to see Chase Edmonds, even if you just watch his highlights, he has this like unique way of getting through the hole without getting touched, even when it seems impossible. Whereas Duke Johnson is more of a bulldozer, and it just feels like you're going more to the finesse side of things with this offense than what Duke does. Like, I would have had no problem bringing him back at all. You know, I thought he was great last year.
Just a shame where he's gone, isn't it? It's
that's the one that's amazing how many players leave Miami and end up in Buffalo. You know, even like when Frank Gore left, like I'd have loved to have Frank Gore back on that team the year he left, but ends up in Buffalo. Didn't Richard Bush end up in there as well? Like, we've had loads of players that end up,
Feels like some of the board of the humidity and want to experience the other extreme, but that is a hell of an extreme to experience.
So. I'd like to figure out if I'd get bored of that as a humidity. Yeah. Give me a chance, we'll find out.
All good, fam. Right, a couple of re-signings, which I want to quickly mention. I won't go into many of the defensive guys because they do what they say on the tin. Duke Riley, Landon Roberts at linebacker, Brennan Scarlett at linebacker, quite a sort of special teams as well, and Darren Smythe at tight end. I won't spend too long on that, but just to say I'm very, very happy with that deal. I think obviously Gesicki values him as a teammate and a friend. I think he's probably the best blocker of the three tight ends we've got, but he also has a safe pair of hands. You can't see many drops on tape from Darren Smythe. He picks up short yardage. Occasionally, you're screaming for the ball to be fed to Gesicki, and suddenly Smythe gets a run on it as well because the opposition are taking Gesicki out of the game. So, nice little pickup there. 2 years, $7 million. You know, he's fine. It's been a good draft. He's been solid.
It just makes sense. Do you know what I mean? There's not much to talk about, but it's just
does what it says.
It's like a solid signing.
Yeah, the one that's probably a bit more of a confused question mark, but is probably presents value in the grand scheme of things, is Preston Williams, which is the kind of the only one I really saw as a kind of re-signing and went, really? Because after his kind of rookie season where there was not much else on the roster and he had a good, solid season and everyone kind of started, you know, expecting to see, you know, the next undrafted free agent wizard, he hasn't done anything. He's been injured. He's seen very little in terms of production since that 2019 season. In reality, mate, he probably doesn't make it out of camp, does he? But he's there as a kind of depth option with a bit of value.
I think he's going to make it. I think this is one of those that Chris Greer has pounded the table for and says, look, I see something here. I know the talent is in here. He feels like a better fit for Mike McDaniel as a person than Brian Flores. That's quirky. You know, that's based on absolutely nothing other than me kind of trying to assess the guy's personality. Do you know what I mean, mate? So take that for what it is. But I don't know, just feels like a better fit. Feels like the prototypical size of a guy that would fit this offense. You know, they talked about kind of having these guys at each position at X, Y, and Z. And like, man, does he feel like if you were trying to, I'm pretty sure it was Charlie from Go Time Dolphins that put it the other day, if you were building a wide receiver, it would, you know, that this guy might look like Preston Williams because he kind of has it all. It's more about staying healthy and consistent. It just feels like this is one of those that Chris Greer might have pounded the table and say, look, just give my guy a chance. Let's see if there's something to work with. Like you said, and if you choose to move on, you're hardly crippling yourself. You know, I don't think it's prohibitive. So it makes sense. I can see why it's done.
Yeah, he's the best blocking receiver on this team once he's, if he's playing. And that feels like I said earlier, 22 personnel. Preston Williams split out to the right. Guess where we're going to run the ball on? Guess who's going to be lead blocking on that move? So, yeah, it feels like we could see him there. I don't think he'll get through camp because I think the wide receiver gap is so strong in this year's draft that someone's going to be drafted in the fifth, sixth, seventh round who makes the roster over him.
That's perfect, right? Yeah, isn't that, this is the exact situation we want to be with going into the draft. Look, if the guy is there, great, we'll take him. And if it's not, we'll work with what we've got. That's also fine. It's you don't want to be in a position where you head into the first round. You don't want to be a team that's desperate for a quarterback where everyone knows where you're going. Like, it puts you in such a weak position when it comes to negotiating trades or anything. It also makes you vulnerable to someone moving up and, even in your division, just to take people to spite you. So, it just feels like, again, gives you options. I think the more options you have, the better chance you have to succeed.
Exactly. Right. We're going to draw it to a close there, but man, it's still ongoing. It's that excitement, that off-season buzz. You just can't get away from it in the NFL at all. I know you're away for a week or so, aren't you, mate, after this week? Is that the case?
I'm back next Tuesday.
Oh, fine.
Friday.
There you go. Well, I hope you have a nice weekend away, man. We are not going to miss any news.
No.
Hopefully, we've got some news of an interesting signing of our own at some point, which I'm incredibly excited to bring you. I just need to get it over the line, and then we will bring it to you as well. If you're wondering why Si's not here, unfortunately, he's not very well at the moment, so do send him your best regards. I know he'll be listening, though he'll appreciate that. And from Lee and I, hope you get well soon, Si. You are sorely missed, so looking forward to having you back on. But yeah, anything to finish us off with, mate, before we go out of here?
No, that's it. I think that's it. I was going to say, I hope Simon's not just trying to negotiate a contract to get away from us. Just holding out. That's not what's happening.
Exactly. Cool. Well, thanks for listening, guys. If Teron Armstead has signed, we'll jump on the live stream and we'll be back. So, yeah, anyway, look forward to talking about that next week if he doesn't sign. So, there we go. Thanks for joining. Speak to you later.